Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk with the lead singer of a legendary band from the 80s.
Oh, excellent. Patrick, who is it?
I'll give you a hint, Jim. They have an animal in their name.
Did they have any well-known songs?
Sure. One of them was just performed the other night in front of thousands of people.
Wow. You mean we got the singer from...
Yes, Jim. The singer from Squirrel Bait.
Hey, Patrick, we are back in the basement.
Yes, we are.
This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we have a very special guest on the phone line today.
I'm excited.
If you hear, listeners, any interference, that's because of the crappy phone reception. But I think our guest is going to come through pretty well.
Yeah, it will.
We have Peter Searcy.
Yeah.
Now, you know Peter Searcy, right?
Yeah, I know him from Squirrel Bait and Big Wheel and his solo work and a couple of other things. I was lucky enough to see the band actually when they were existing at the old 930 Club in Washington, D.C. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, saw you guys, and I'm really excited about this to talk about not only the work with Squirrel Bait and sort of where that went. I think many of our listeners, Jim, probably know the bands that came after Squirrel Bait, right?
Right.
Probably than the band themselves, or maybe know them in legend. But and also, Peter's got a new record that came out this
summer. Yeah, so we'll get to all of that. So welcome, yeah. Peter.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks, man.
So the first thing, let's just get this out of the way first. Why you came to our attention just recently, because you have a famous friend, right? You are just on stage with somebody that is kind of ruling rock and roll right now, right?
The last rock star, I think.
So tell us about that.
You know, the quick version is I've known his tour manager, Gus, for a long time, and Gus has been their tour manager, I think, almost since the beginning. And so, you know, the person is Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters. And so my girlfriend, Stephanie, is a huge Foo Fighters fan, and I'm a fan. And so we reached out to Gus when I saw that they were going to be in Birmingham, which is about 2 hours from Louisville. I mean, excuse me, Atlanta.
Atlanta, and, where you're living now. Yeah.
Yeah, Atlanta, where I live now. And so we went over and to the show, and we got our tickets at Will Call, and I texted Gus and let him know that we were in. He said, you know, basically texted back, brush up on your Squirrel Bait lyrics. And I texted him back that that was pretty funny, haha, whatever. And he said, no, seriously, you know, so I, you know, seriously, Sun God. And I knew that Dave Grohl was a fan of the band because he mentioned it maybe 7 or 8 years ago in Rolling Stone, is that being one of his favorite songs, Sun God from Squirrel Bait. And so, you know, we're backstage hanging out. Gus comes to meet us and takes us back and, you know, meet Dave. And he's super nice and awkwardly excited to meet me, which I thought was really funny.
So that was the first time you'd ever met him?
Yeah, I'd never met him.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I thought maybe you guys had a relationship back from, you know.
No,
times.
No. Yeah. You know, so he was super excited, you know, said he was a little starstruck, which, you know, I don't, yeah, that was kind of funny. He said it's all, he said it's very odd when he gets, he said, I don't get it all the time. You know, it's in, you know, it's people you don't expect it from. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, Paul McCartney played on your last album. So, you know. Asked me if I wanted to play Sun God. I said I'd love to, and said as long as we can run it one time, because you know, I didn't know if he really knew the song or not. So, and I hadn't performed it in a long time. And we go backstage. They have a practice room. Stephanie and I got lucky and got to actually listen to the Foo Fighters run through 5 songs, just the two of us sitting in the practice room. And you know, they practice how they play full on. There's no click track, backing tracks. They don't use any of that kind of stuff. So that was really, as you know, for a huge, I mean, it's a, just a massive show. And to know that they're just pulling it all off as a band is kind of refreshing. And then Dave and I ran Sun God, and it was evident right away. He knew the song, and he said, I've been playing it for 30 years, you know, just sitting around. And then, so during the encore of their set, he brought me up on stage and, you know, for for 4 minutes, I stood on the side of the stage while he talked about Squirrel Bait and me, and it was pretty darn surreal.
That's cool. Well, I've seen the video clips online, and you sounded great, Peter.
Well, thank you. I saw someone, there have been just a really great outpouring of nice comments. I told someone, you usually don't get to hear this many nice things unless you die. You know, that's the only time. And so it was really nice to hear all that. You know, I saw there were a couple negative comments that came up, and it's generally, it doesn't sound like it used to. It doesn't sound like something. I'm like, I'm going to be 50 in January. You know, there's no way it could.
All right. Well, that's got to be really fun. So that's cool.
Awesome.
All right. So, Patrick.
Yeah.
You probably have some questions about Squirrel Bait,
I
right?
Do,
going
yeah.
back to the old days.
Right, right. I totally do. And Peter, I won't make you go through the history, but really quickly, Jim, let's just say Squirrel Bait was a, they were a punk rock band, but I think more than that.
Right.
That came from Louisville in 83, 84. I think they formed 83, probably, if I'm correct. They put out two records on Homestead. There's a self-titled EP and then Skag Heaven, which came out in 87. So, Peter, you guys were all really young, essentially all in high school when Squirrel Bait formed, right? Was there any kind of punk scene in Louisville in 83, or what was the scene that you guys sort of evolved into?
Yeah, I mean, there absolutely was. I mean, it was definitely a do-it-yourself. We found our Maximum Rock and Roll in our Forced Exposure magazine. That's how we got it. There were bands like the Babylon Dance Band, mm-hmm. who we looked up to. I went to a school called the Brown School, which members of a band called Your Food went there.
Mm-hmm.
There were people that I looked up to in the punk rock scene. It wasn't really a hardcore scene like you would have had in DC. It was more of a kind of an art rock. And the scene kind of came, you know, it was from all over. It was from all walks of life, from every like different area of town. And, you know, you had Sean Garrison and the guys from Malignant Growth, who were from the south end of Louisville, and the Squirrel Bait guys were from the east end of Louisville, and those are kind of different sections of the city. So yeah, there was definitely, you know, we skateboarded, we were young punk rockers.
And how about you personally, who, you know, your vocal sound came to dominate the records over the kind of the roar that David Grubbs and Ben Doherty kind of made and
yeah.
you know, other guys in the band. But how about you when you were going into high school? I mean, were you listening to punk rock at that time, or what kind of stuff were you listening to?
Well, I mean, I was, you know, we kind of grew up listening to what our parents listened to, you know, as kids. So there was a lot of Beatles, Stones, there's a lot of singer-songwriter kind of stuff. And I think those melodies and that kind of melodic sense finds its way into Squirrel Bait a lot. I mean, I love, even then I didn't know it, but I loved melody. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, had just probably purchased Zen Arcade and was listening to Minor Threat, and I was listening to Misfits and that kind of thing. And I was, you know, 17 years old, full of, you know, fear and angst and all that. And, you know, I think it definitely comes through in those recordings.
Get ahead.
got together, Jim, and they recorded a, you know, a demo that sort of made its way around and eventually got to, you know, Gerard and those guys at Homestead. Peter, you guys were pretty, you know, immediately embraced by bands that you looked up to, right? Like Husker Du and Big Black and the Meat Puppets. And
yeah,
so,
Grubbs had, you know, Grubbs was really good. You know, this was back in the day where, you know, you had your pen pal, basically. Yeah. You know, people wrote to each other and people wrote back. Grubbs became pen pals with Albini. And, you know, Albini kind of gave him some ideas, recording ideas for when we studio. And, you know, it was really Grubbs who kind of pushed us out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was his kind of baby. Yeah, I mean, it was very, very shortly after, you know, I sometimes forget even how things came about, but I think, you know, he sent music to Gerard through someone. I don't remember exactly how. And next thing I know, we have an album out. And the next thing I know, you know, Bob Mould mentions it in Spin magazine, and it really kind of helped things take off. We had played a show with Husker Du at the Jockey Club, which was kind of a famous club right outside of Cincinnati in Newport, Kentucky. And he had seen us play there, and I think, you know, we left an impression on him.
Peter, there was a special combination of things that were happening between the drumming and the guitar playing and your vocals, right?
You know, the whole thing that always goes on with Squirrel Bait whenever it gets talked about is the divisions within the band.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. It really, you know, they always brought up the jocks, which cracks me up, versus the nerds in the band, equating Ben and I to jocks. You know, I played soccer. Ben couldn't play his way out of, you know, he's not the greatest sportsman. But, you know, when I look back on the divisions in the band, it was really, Ben and I were from broken homes. We grew up with, you know, single moms, and then my mom remarried.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, lower middle class kids. And the other Squirrel Bait guys were from stable homes, upper middle class to rich. And I think it really, I think that was the division. We all got along at certain points in the band just great. And then at other times, we didn't. I mean, I have utmost respect for Grubbs, and, you know, and Clark's gone on to be a really, you know, a successful lawyer, and I love Brian. But there was definitely a division, and I think it was definitely David's baby, you know, as far as the music goes. But I think what happened a little bit when the recordings came out is Ben's really amazing drumming and my vocals were the real touchstone of what people talked about. And that might have been uncomfortable, but, you know, but that was really, you know, it was Grubbs' vision, mm-hmm. really. He was, you know, he was the songwriter, and he really pushed me as a singer. And sometimes, you know, I thought they were a little cruel sometimes as people, you know, to other, you know, they were just very inside. Everything was an inside joke, and everybody was, you know, Ben and I were just young. To me, playing music was something I thought we could do as a career. I didn't know any better. I didn't know that, you know, no one in my family was pushing me to go to college. You know, we just didn't have that. We didn't grow up like that. You know, these are all things that, you know, I've been able to figure out over the years.
Sure.
You know, if Clark and David and Brian were always on a path to, you know, Brian's path changed, obviously, with Slint, but, you know, Grubbs and Clark were always going to they went to Ivy League schools, basically.
Well, let me just ask this real quick. You mentioned your age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you did those first couple of demos when you guys were in high school, and then when you released your first album with Homestead, were you still in high school at that time or just out?
No, just I was, I think, a senior.
Yeah.
Senior in high school. Yeah.
So what was that like? I mean, that's not something a lot of people get to experience in a band. You know, you're going to high school, you're recording an album that's actually, you know, it's on an indie label. Did the other kids in school know about this? Were you sort of legendary or?
No, I mean, I went to it wasn't a performing arts school, but it was a little bit like Freedom School from Billy Jack. You know, it was It was, you didn't think you were going to hear a Billy Jack reference.
No, Billy, you can't do it. If you hurt Bernard, they're going to close down the school and ruin everything we've tried to build.
It was a small school. I don't think it was really a big deal to anybody, you know. It didn't seem like a big deal to me. I mean, it was fun, and, you know, but it really, you know, I got a note to get out of school so I could go play CBGBs, you know.
That's fantastic.
You know, there were some things that were fun about it, you know, and especially, and funny in retrospect, you know, driving with Clark's mom in a station wagon to go play our first out of town show at the Metro in Chicago, you know, those kind of things. Having to have our parents rent us a van so we could go on our first tour, you know, those are all things that make me laugh.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to hear you say that too, Peter, because, and I mean this in the best possible sense, Jim, when our friends and I saw Squirrel Bait play at the old 930 Club in D.C. and they got on stage and we were like, I can't believe how young these guys are. You know, we were expecting like this monolithic, powerful, you know, band, and there wasn't a lot of biographical information, you know, on the record itself, and it was pretty obscure. But then I'm like, this guitar player, that little kid on the left, he looks like he's 13 years old, you know, and
right?
They were still producing this monstrous sound.
Well, I think Ben at the time was our, you know, our senior member.
Yeah.
At like, he might have been 19. We were young. I listened, you know, I found there's a live recording out there of Squirrel. There's some bad ones, early ones. The version of Sun God in the Slint documentary is a little rough. Mm-hmm. I'm not really a fan of hearing that. But there was a live recording from, I think, Trenton, New Jersey. I always thought that we weren't very good live, and I kind of, that was my thought for years in my head. And then I came across, somebody sent me a copy of that recording from Trenton. It was pretty great.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised. You know, I think we hit a stride. We didn't play a lot. Didn't tour. I mean, I have no idea how many live shows we played, but it certainly wasn't very many. The Trenton show would have been after we were out on, I mean, we toured very little. There are a lot of people. Now, you did see us because you mentioned a club and that we actually played there. I've had plenty of conversations with people who claim to have seen us, and I don't say anything. I'm like, no, we never played there.
Well, you know, and this brings us kind of full circle, Jim, to where we were.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to ask Peter a little bit about Big Wheel and his new record too.
Sure.
But let's talk a little bit about the influence, right?
Yes.
So there was the two records, 86, you know, by sort of late 87 or so, you know, was kind of done, right? David Grubbs had gone to Georgetown to college, and others had left, right? And so the band sort of disintegrated, right, Peter? But then the influence just kept going,
right?
And you know, it just obviously Dave Grohl was listening to it, you know, whether it was Scream days or Nirvana days. And there's obviously a lot of, I can argue there's a lot of the sort of the loud quiet and explosions in Nirvana's music. You could hear it right there in Squirrel Bait and some other areas too. And did that,
no doubt.
Did that surprise you, Peter, that, you know, the legacy kind of just kept growing? I mean, it wasn't like an explosion of, you know, Squirrel Bait mythology, but in some ways kind of like the Velvet Underground, you know, there was this influence there of these records.
I was going to say, Peter, you're like Alex Chilton, right? You're like big star.
when you're the center of it, it kind of gets lost a little bit on me, but I listen back to the stuff and I hear special things in it. You know, I hear a great combination of Ben, who had almost a funk soul leaning sometimes in his playing, with just, you know, he's one of the most dynamic people you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
I mean, if he walks into a room and starts talking, you know, people just gravitate towards him, and that's the way his drumming is, you know. And I was you know, a conflicted, emotional 17-year-old kid, and it comes through in my singing. And Grubbs was a great tactician of a writer. It was a great combination of people, you know. I wish we had gotten along better, and I wish we could have made some more music together, but, you know, that's in the past.
Have you had other artists kind of similar to this Dave Grohl situation come up and or let you know somehow that, hey, Squirrel Bait was a band I really liked or was important to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, Greg Dooley from the Wigs is a huge fan. You know, they actually had me come out and play with the Wigs a few years ago there. We did Kid Dynamite together, and I think that's on YouTube. You can find that.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, we did that on New Year's Eve in Cincinnati at their New Year's Eve show. And yeah, I mean, I've met a number of musicians. You know, it was a cool time. I think bands that you listened to back then really meant something because you really had to search them out.
Yeah.
You know, so when you found something like that, you know, and that's kind of what I think Dave Grohl was talking about. When you found something, when you saved up for it, when you made your mixtape and had, you know, a Squirrel Bait song on there next to, you know, a Replacement song next to whatever, you know, it was I think a little music had a little bit more meaning because you had to work for it a little harder.
The group, Peter, you know, there's a ton of Associated, and I think somewhere online there's a pretty decent family tree of like Squirrel Bait.
I've
like,
seen that.
Yeah, all the places they went. But you know, obviously Slint gets a lot of attention, and you know, there was the bands that David Grubbs was involved with. You know, there's King Kong, there's Bitch Magnet, Bastro, all these bands, Evergreen. But tell us a little bit about Big Wheel. I think it's an underrated group, and you guys put out 3 albums, I believe. And
I would love to have 1 album.
Yeah,
Big Wheel. I didn't know what I was, you know, doing. I had a cello scholarship to the University of Louisville. Wasn't really interested in doing it, really. It was kind of a waste. You know, I feel like I wasted somebody's time, you know, somebody's scholarship who would have been more into it than me. So the other guys in Big Wheel were in a kind of a college rock cover band, and I went to see them a couple times, and I loved the way they played. I just thought they had fun with it, and there was so much of Squirrel Bait that ended up not being fun. These 3 guys on stage playing were all friends, and that's what I always wanted. And I think that's, you know, that might have been, you know, the 18, 19-year-old me looking for, you know, brotherhood of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I sang a couple songs with them, you know, with their cover band. And I liked the energy. I liked how it felt. My regret about the whole thing is I had so much, not when I say so much attention, but I had attention. I had, you know, people who were looking to see what I would do next.
Yeah.
I hadn't really written songs, you know, I'd been part of what Grubbs was doing. So I feel like I kind of learned to write songs in front of people. I really, when I listen back to the Big Wheel stuff, I like a lot of it. I really wish that I could put 1 record together from it all.
Oh, castle set to be raised. Keep it in break down, fit the words and make them big. Somebody had to listen, someone had to judge, somebody pays the correct, someone pays the price.
I was just thinking about that the other day. Yeah, just I felt like I learned to write songs in front of people, and that's a kind of an odd thing to do. Most people get to hone their songwriting to get to that situation and be able to release an album. Obviously, Giant or Rockville or whoever it was that released the first Big Wheel album, you know, I think it's a pretty good album overall. I think it's got some, you know, things on it that I'm not a big fan of, but at the same time, I think it's got a good vibe.
Me too.
Stephanie, my girlfriend had never heard it. And, she listened to it recently. She's like, I like the young Peter's voice on this. She's loving it.
And Peter, you're still continuing to record solo work and you just had something out this year.
I did. Yeah. I've never really played a lot of guitar on my albums. I've always just done the, you know, I write on acoustic or whatever, or write on electric, and then leave it up to the experts or real guitar players. But I thought it would be really fun to just do it all myself and kind of explore that. And so I had a studio and I basically played everything on the album except for the drums, because I can only play a bad blues drum beat. That's about it. So it was really fun for me to kind of explore guitar playing, and you know, and I'm a cello player, so the four strings on bass always made sense to me. Kind of make a rock album a little bit still with the songwriting that I love, which is typically just verse, chorus, and bridge. I'm not trying to break any ground. I'm just trying to do it in some kind of smart way that'll mean something to somebody.
The new album is called Leave It All Out There.
I listened to it yesterday, Jim, on Spotify, and Peter's right, man. It's got a rock edge to it.
I think the next plan is I've got two songs that are almost finished, and I'm going to write a couple more. And I'm going to do what I was talking about with the with Big Wheel, and I'm going to release a kind of a best of solo album, you know, vinyl.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be great.
And the nice thing is I've got a little label out of Louisville that'll put it out. And it's, you know, if I make some new fans, great. If people who already like it want to have it on vinyl and have, you know, maybe 12 to 15 songs in one place, they'll be able to get that. So
a couple of quick things here based on what you were saying earlier, Peter. One is that when you mentioned recording most of the instruments on your own, playing all the tracks, right? Or most of the tracks. That's kind of how Dave got started with the Foo Fighters, right? So I see big things for your future.
Well, it's funny. When I was making that... when I was making the last album, I did think about that. You know, certainly I can't drum, so that takes that out of the equation. but I knew that had to have been a fun challenge. I mean, this was more of a challenge for me. So, you know, I don't know that on these next things, I don't really care to do all the guitar playing. You know, I've got too many great guitar players that I love what they do and want to bring them in to this. That was a very insular record for me.
Grohl also owes you some payback here, so he can come drum on for you, right?
There you go.
Well, don't think I'm not going to ask
you. You absolutely should.
So yes, I sent him some material. I don't know if he'll ever listen to it or get a chance to, but I played all the instruments on it except for drums. So hopefully we can get him to do that. It'd be great. That'd be cool. Heck of a drummer, that's for sure.
He can play a little bit.
Pretty decent.
Just a wee bit, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing, going back to what you were saying about playing the cello and then the bass, how does it translate to the bass? So this is a true story. When I was in high school, my high school girlfriend was a cellist.
Really?
Yes. And she learned how to play the bass. But she still tuned it like a cello. Do you know what I'm talking about, Peter? Right?
Yeah. You would know. That's interesting. Yeah.
So you don't do that.
No, I don't know. I just play the bass the way God meant for
Yeah.
No, I can see how that would make sense to her, but as you know, but playing guitar it would be very confusing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay.
Right.
Thanks very much for your time, Peter. We really appreciate this.
Thank you so much, man.
I appreciate you guys. Take care.
Keep in touch. Let us know how things are going. All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Jim, that was great. And, our listeners got a lot of work to do. They got squirrel bait if they don't know it. They got a big wheel to catch up on.
Yeah.
And Peter's solo work, too.
So, okay, let's just wrap this up real quickly.
Yeah,
that was great. I'm really happy that we could spend some time with Peter. We'll probably, you can tell, I think he enjoys talking about this stuff. We'll love to have him on again sometime. Mm-hmm. Okay, and please listen to Rock in the Suburbs.
Every day.
You can find us on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on lots of other. You can also find our website, suburbspod.com, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at suburbspod, and you can email us rock@suburbspod.com.
Do that.
If anybody out there has seen Squirrel Bait, that would be really cool. We'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to hear others who have seen the band.
Or if anyone was at that show, that Foo Fighters show in Birmingham, we'd love to hear about
that. Better.
Also, you can call and leave a message, and we can put your voice on the show. The number is 612-440-1984. So do all that. And I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys later. Mm-hmm.